Log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. Thank you for listening.
The following is a statement by a candidate in the KPFA local station board election.
Hello, my name is Ramses Teon Nichols, and I am running for the KPFA local station board. I am a social services worker at a nonprofit organization in San Francisco, and I am the chair of the organizing committee for my union, SEIU Local 1021. KPFA has been a big influence in my life, and now I want to give back to the station. I believe that to grow and prosper, KPFA must expand its outreach to underrepresented communities, including youth and people of color. I also think that the station should become more democratic in its decision-making by reviving a program council with listener representation. I am running with the United for Community Radio team. Read more about us at votecommunityradio.org, and thank you for your support.
The preceding statement by the candidate does not necessarily reflect the views of the station or its staff. More information about all the candidates can be found at kpfa.org.
Angela. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, broadcasting here on Freak Radio, 101 FM. Tune in every day at noon for this daily national, international, unembedded grassroots news hour. But not just every day at noon, Monday through Friday. Tune in anytime, 24 hours a day, because Freak Radio is your radio.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines of the mainstream news. I'm Steve Rendell, here with Peter Hart. This week on Counterspin, in the past 6 years, Israel has invaded Lebanon in 2006, Gaza in 2008, and is now pounding Gaza with drone missiles and artillery. With a seeming strategy of occupation, settlement, and war, many are wondering where this ends. We'll talk with Youssef Munayer, the director of Washington, D.C.'s Jerusalem Fund, about what happens when the smoke clears in Gaza. Also on Counterspin today, we'll talk to independent journalist Amy Goodman about her new book, The Silenced Majority, and what she thinks media can and must do to serve the public. All that's coming up, but first we'll take a look back at the week's press.
The Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip have at this point killed over 100 Palestinians. On the Israeli side, 3 deaths have been recorded from rockets fired from Gaza. But some media accounts still strive to present a kind of symmetry. A November 15th Washington Post headline read, "Civilians in Gaza, Israel suffer amid conflict." The paper told readers, quote, "As the Israeli military assault ramped up and militants retaliated with rockets, civilians on both sides faced painful but all too familiar scenes," close quote. At the time the story was filed, 16 Palestinians had been killed. The Israeli deaths, according to one government official, were entirely preventable had the victims followed the emergency instructions they were given. But some media accounts still strive for some kind of balance. A Los Angeles Times article on November 17th led with this, quote, "Back and forth violence between Israel and Hamas left civilians on both sides digging out of rubble and broken glass Saturday as the conflict entered its fourth day," close quote. At that point, 38 Palestinians had been killed. In Israel, meanwhile, a rocket attack caused minor injuries to 3. No one should minimize the fear of living anywhere where bombs or rockets are falling. But given the one-sided death toll of the attacks on Gaza, 3 Israeli deaths and over 120 Palestinians, media accounts that try to paint a balanced picture present an entirely false reality.
Since we're in the season when pundits give Barack Obama's second term advice, it wasn't all that surprising to crack open USA Today on November 14th and read this, quote, "Since President Barack Obama won't face another campaign, he will be more willing to break with special interests in the Democrats."
And coming up next, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. To check out Counterspin, get yourself a computer or borrow one, go online and go to their website, Counterspin. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. I'm Robert Norris. We're going to be covering the most recent city council meeting the tax on homeless people and the concerns about needles, feces, garbage, and the other concerns that some citizens have brought up, and then how to reconcile these concerns with my traditional concerns about criminalization of poor people that seems to be heightened by this these legitimate series of concerns as well. Stay tuned.
Keeping the peace down on your knees. Keeping the peace, keeping the peace. Yeah, we're keeping the peace. Keeping the peace, we got you down on your knees. Keeping the peace, it's Operation Peacemaker. It's not a war, can't you see? It's peace, they're fighting and they're killing more. We'll stay there till the end. It's the white man's burden. Keeping the peace. Keeping the peace, keeping the peace. Yeah, we're keeping the peace. Keeping the peace, we got you down on your knees. Keeping the peace, it's our responsibility. We guarantee we'll protect the unelected from democracy. Don't say no more, my friend. It will not end until we save them from them. Saving your health by keeping the peace. Keeping the peace, we got you down on your knees. By keeping the peace. And if you wanna know what it means, just ask the Somalians and the First Nations and the Afghans and the Haitians and the Japanese in the 1940s about keeping the peace. So say you gotta ask the Somalians and the First Nations and the Afghans and the Haitians and the Muslim men. About keeping the peace. So take a look at what's happening. They're killing in the name of peace all over again. It's never gonna end until we get taste of what we're offering. Close our eyes and just keep on talking, all the while pretending we're keeping the peace.
Democracy, got it.
to a hot slot democracy. Yeah, we gotta be suspicious now of everything. Gotta be suspicious now of everything and everyone. Everything and everyone.
That was two by Sarah Marlowe, which got a kind of a sleepy kind of voice. Keeping the Peace and What I Fear Most. You are tuned to 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, and you're listening to Bathrob Spears' Broadsides. This is my Thursday evening show, which goes till 8 o'clock, and I will be with you tonight. Covering in large part, well, I thought there might be a lot of interest in the issues raised by groups of people who came to city council after picking up lots of needles and policing the railroad tracks and then arriving at city council demanding there be better needle disposal services and so forth and better issues to address crime like petty theft and break-ins and the sense of general insecurity. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Welcome to Free Radio.
This is Toby.
Hello?
Hey, this is Toby.
Hey, Toby. You're kind of slightly coming in staccato, but I can hear you. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm in Texas now, right now with my family. For the holidays, of course, and I wanted to talk about this support the California Homeless Bill. You heard about it?
The California Homeless Bill of Rights, modeled after the Rhode Island Bill of Rights?
Yes.
Yeah, I have. Actually, we talked about this about 4 months ago, but yeah, this is a bill that... I'm not sure if it's given any more protection to Rhode Island homeless people than before. Do you have any news on that? Hello, Toby? Toby? We may have...
have a bad connection.
Yeah, it's kind of... but try. So, did you hear what I just said? Hello? Yeah, you know, probably the best thing to do is maybe try calling again. I don't know, because it's not coming through at the moment. So call back.
Better. Okay.
Yeah, it's not happening. You're breaking up, old man. Try from a different place, maybe, or a different phone.
I'm out.
Yeah, it's not working.
Yeah.
Try later if you can get some other place or some other phone. Thanks. And that's Toby, who was an activist from Sacramento and San Jose, who came down to be part of the annual celebration of the Occupy Santa Cruz movement that was at the site of the filming, or I should say the showing of the film by Brent Adams. And that was an interesting retrospective on certain aspects of Occupy Santa Cruz, which he showed in Laurel Park, and it's available on YouTube, if you want to check it out there, in segments. A lot of interesting commentary, some of which I agree with, some of which I don't. And it does at least try to cover a number of aspects of what happened during the Occupy movement before it was crushed by the police and sheriff's departments in December of last year. So, I guess I'll begin with a couple of announcements. There are going to be some events happening this weekend that might interest folks, although I'm not sure if they're going to be rained out or not. There's a parade, a kind of a Christmas, I think it's called the Christmas Parade, that happens every year around this time, the beginning of December, the end of November. And let's see if I have the details of it. I think I do. I just have to draw them up here. And let's see if I can find them. This is a parade that starts around Laurel and Cathcart, actually one block back from Laurel and Cathcart, and then winds its way down Pacific Avenue. Usually pretty large crowds, hundreds if not a couple, maybe even 1,000 people, depending on the weather and depending on the enthusiasm of the crowds, and I guess it depends on other things too. And in the past, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I've been with, has been a part of that parade. Not entirely welcomed by the mercantile and commercial interests, since we try to expose and point out the hypocrisies of the Downtown Association and some of the merchant groups and the police department regarding how homeless people are treated on Pacific Avenue. And that has resulted, I think, this year in the Human Rights Organization, the United Nations Association, deciding that we are not a welcome part of their parade because we're too controversial, produce too much critical response from those who didn't like our signs and our songs. Was it last year or the year before? I don't remember. Anyway, I'm not sure what's going to be happening that day since so many other things are happening, but the parade, I believe, starts... Well, let's see, when does it start? It starts... I'm looking to find that. Saturday Christmas Parade. It starts at... you gather at 9 o'clock if you want to be a part of the UN Association contingent, and I'm not sure it's not it's disinviting us, or that was the words at least of one of the UN members who actually is part of Huff, but she doesn't want to. She wanted to clarify what at least the position of some of the UN Association folks was. This is a parade that is described, join the fun as floats, marching bands, fire trucks, horses, classic cars, and Santa go down Pacific Avenue. And I guess the official time of the parade is 10 a.m. to noon. I often, in the past, have distributed leaflets during the parade about homeless issues, police abuse issues, and so forth. And I don't think I'll be doing it this year. I might be. I'm not sure, because at the same time, out at Cabrillo College, there's another event happening, which is the homelessness, well, the summit, Creating Smart Solutions to Homelessness, a forum, a countrywide community engagement summit, according to the literature they're putting out. Lunch and snacks provided if you've registered. I thought I'd register, but I haven't gotten my official ticket to come, so maybe I'll have to bring my own lunch. I don't know. Or maybe they'll stop me at the gate and say, no, no, no. But I doubt it. I think they've got a pretty loose policy about letting people in, although it's a little hard to tell. I've never been to a Smart Solutions to Homelessness countywide community engagement summit. A little too much to get my lips around there. What can we do about homelessness in Santa Cruz County, reads the blurb. The question itself strikes a passionate chord with strong and divergent views in the community. There are many public and community-based organizations providing programs and services to people who are homeless. That's, of course, the first deceptive statement. There's essentially no programs providing shelter to even a meaningful fraction of the homeless community. 90% of homeless people in Santa Cruz are outside, and 100% of them outside are criminalized for being outside. It is illegal to be outside unless you are in a campground. It's illegal in Santa Cruz to sleep after 11 o'clock at night outside or in any building that is not a domicile or residence, even in your own vehicle, even if it's legally parked. There are a few exceptions. If you are on a private property in a business parking lot, one of two vehicles on that lot, or in a church parking lot, one of three vehicles, with the written permission of the business or church, that's an exception. Another one is you can be there for 3 nights out of a month in somebody's driveway, but for the other 27 nights of that month, get out of town. So the idea that this, anyway, this Smart Solutions to Homelessness countywide, Community Engagement Summit, the blurb continues, law enforcement and emergency response resources are used to address symptoms of homelessness. Neighborhoods, parks, and business districts are impacted by homelessness, often in significant ways. However, there is common ground. We all want less homelessness. It's interesting, this initial description of what this summit is about, and there's more in the description, tends to focus on law enforcement and emergency response is only used if someone is, you know, bleeding on the street, or they want to arrest you for camping or for some other violation of the law. Neighborhoods, parks, and business districts are supposed to be areas we all share, but in fact, the implication of this kind of description is that these are somehow interest groups that are worried about the reality of homelessness spoiling their pristine areas. And indeed, there are some real concerns about environmental problems created by the fact that there are no public bathrooms at night. There are no needle injection or inhalation centers in Santa Cruz, or for that matter, anywhere in the United States, that give people safe places to go to deal with their addictions if they wish to deal with them without giving them up, or even drug abuse programs to get rid of them. In Santa Cruz, there are very few of those, and apparently the easiest way to get into one of those is to get arrested. So this is what I'm told. But in any case, one of the things I'll be talking about later in the show is that the presence of needles in Cowles Beach, along with break-ins to vehicles on various streets on the west side, and theft of recycling materials, and a sense of insecurity that some folks have, just having the nearby presence of people camping outside, has prompted a kind of a, I'm calling it a mob reaction, is to denigrate it perhaps unfairly. But certainly a very strong reaction by a large crowd of people who came to City Council on Tuesday night at the 5 o'clock oral communications period and spoke. And I'm hoping I can find the proper tape and play a little of what they said. I think I will have some of that tape available later. But I'm talking about an event that's going to be happening on Saturday, simultaneously with the parade downtown, the Christmas parade. This is out at Cabrillo College from 10 to 4, Homelessness Summit, Creating Smart Solutions to Homelessness. What this really is it's a way of, my reaction to it is a fear that what this really is an attempt to pander and cater to business interests by saying, see, it's more economical to house the most deleterious and difficult of the alcoholics and drug abusers people. And therefore, you know, that's something we should do, and let's get a buy-in to that, and then find other ways of controlling and dispersing the rest of the folks from the area so they won't impact the neighborhoods, parks, and business districts. Now, I'm not going to say that's necessarily what everybody there is going to say. I'm sure that some people won't and some people will oppose that. But the people who are pulling this particular summit together, John Leopold, Chair, County Board of Supervisors, Don Lane, Mayor, City of Santa Cruz, Eduardo Montesino, Mayor, City of Watsonville, Mary Lou Gecky, Executive Director, United Way of Santa Cruz, and Lance Linares, Chief Executive Officer, Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County. Also included are Gary Merrill, Executive Director of the Santa Cruz County Business Council, Christine Sipple, Director County of Santa Cruz Homeless Persons Health Project, and Linda Lemaster, formerly homeless parent, Continuum of Care Evaluation Committee. She also was the co-founder of Housing Now in Santa Cruz. She was the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force and of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women some years ago. That's the city's commission. And Phil Kramer is involved in this. He's the project coordinator for Smart Solutions to the Homelessness Summit. He's the actual coordinator, and he's the project manager of the 180-180 project, which aims to provide housing for the most vulnerable, as he puts it, of the homeless folks, but actually what he may mean is the most costly of the homeless in terms of emergency services, and the most annoying of the homeless because they're you may find them drunk or stretched out downtown or acting out in some ways that discomforts the population of the city of Santa Cruz and disturbs the businesses downtown. And I'm not saying that these aren't legitimate concerns for not just business people, but for everyone. But they are somewhat different than the concerns I have and generally and regularly present on the show, which are about the criminalization of every single homeless person under the laws of the town that give the police unbridled discretion to cite, fine, and then ultimately lock people up who are simply engaging in life-sustaining behavior like sleeping or trying to use their right to be in a public space or sitting down to rest downtown within 14 feet of a building, 14 feet of a crosswalk, 14 feet of a bench, 14 feet of a kiosk, 14 feet of a sign. And there's a whole bunch of other restrictions, all designed to give the police the power to intimidate and move along homeless people, either that they don't want there or that the merchants or some residents don't want there. And that is just simply wrong. And I think, if you think about it, you'll agree. But I want to make sure that folks can call in, and I see the phone lines are open and the ringers are on. So if you'd like to call in, you can, 427-3772, 427-FRSE is the phone number here at Free Radio. Again, this shindig happening this weekend is an opportunity for people to mingle with not just these mucky-muck politicians who I named, who are the ones who seem to be pushing this, but also they're going to be shipping in some homeless folks. They're going to be ordinary people from the community. They're going to be some, I call them right-wing ideologues from Take Back Santa Cruz. Dexter and Alicia Cube may be there. I don't know. I haven't talked to them, but that's what I've heard from other folks. Again, the description of what's going to happen is no single entity or program can address these issues on their own. We need a community-wide response, and this means each and every one of us has a part to play. Would you like to be a part of the solution? Please join us at a community-built and county-wide conference on homelessness with these objectives. Create broader and more diverse community engagement on homelessness. Develop better communication and coordination among those concerned about these issues. Improve understanding of the realities of homelessness in Santa Cruz County. That doesn't sound bad. Share information about proven successful models and solutions working in other communities, including some that are taking shape in Santa Cruz County. And this is an extremely rosy view of what is in fact a situation where the main reality of homelessness comes because of the huge disproportionate relocation of income to the 1%, to the people at the top. That, of course, has also created the housing bubble and stock market bubble and all kinds of other bubbles and rental profiteering and any number of social problems that, of course, are not referred to directly here. Instead, we have the focus on the homeless. You know, these drug abusing people, these alcoholic folks, these mentally ill people. In fact, we're talking about people who just don't have houses, don't have rooms, and the community is too stressed out, at least part of it, and the rest of it is too cheap to provide the basic facilities that would make this a more civilized place for everyone. And, of course, the community is allowing itself to be ripped off endlessly by banks, governmental agencies, private corporations, and in manifold ways, in many ways, which neither presidential candidate addressed nationally, and I didn't hear any local candidates really addressing it much either. Even my good friend Steve Plaich seems to fall into the... Well, it's easy to try to go along with the existing rationale as to what needs to be done in terms of what the real problems are. And so that's one of the reasons let me finish up this description of what's at the summit. Develop a shared vision for change and agreed upon action steps. Form an ongoing community leadership group to carry the work forward on shaping policies to address homelessness. And, you know, in the past I would have said, well, anything that talks about the homeless, I suppose, is better than nothing. But as I've seen so much talk over the years and done a lot of it myself, I don't know. I'm still trying to decide whether I'm going to make my way out there or not. I have registered, so I may show up there. They say they were seeking participation from all geographic areas of Santa Cruz County, representatives from all stakeholder groups, including business, faith-based organizations, service providers, neighborhood groups and service clubs, law enforcement, elected officials, professionals, people who are homeless or formerly homeless. Spanish language translation will be provided. And that's out at Cabrillo College. You can give a call to Phil Kramer at 334-4976 if you want more info. 334-4976. And that's happening on Saturday from 10 to 3. I'll hope to have more information on Sunday about the Santa Cruz Library Board that I believe is meeting in Scotts Valley next Wednesday to discuss suspension policy changes. I haven't seen their agenda. I've just seen a story in the Sentinel that was bruited about 3 weeks ago when they had their last meeting. The proposed patron policy changes allow for staff to suspend someone for up to a year after a series of warnings. Current rules allow only for a 30-day suspension, after which the next step was to seek a temporary restraining order, which would be something to protect the person who... The library is often the last sanctuary for numbers of poor people in a community. Staff now, if this new kick-them-out-for-a-year policy or suspend-them-for-a-year policy is enacted, be able to suspend a patron up to 6 months or a year after a fourth violation of conduct rules. And there are ways to appeal. Again, I haven't seen the actual written proposal. The changes would ban the library for sleeping. It would empower the staff to remove unattended items, such as backpacks, and clarify provisions for animals, dogs, that provide emotional support to patrons. Proposed rules would require staff to ask what kind of service or support the animal provides. And I don't think that's permitted. I don't think people have to answer such questions under the Americans with Disabilities Act. But again, I don't know. There was recently a court case, which I talked about last couple of shows, that Brianna Brewer, where she was given three different citations by Sergeant Bush and one of his minions, Officer Warren, downtown, involving her service animal, her dog. And she successfully argued that the Americans with Disabilities Act prohibited the police from that kind of behavior. And shockingly enough, Judge Gallagher, taking over for Commissioner Bassett in an infraction trial before a court, not a jury trial, but a judge trial, found her not guilty of those charges, as, of course, he should have. Even if the Americans with Disabilities Act hadn't been in force, given the way I'm seeing officers pursuing people downtown under this unconstitutional matrix of harassment ordinances designed to give police kind of an ultimate power to intimidate and terrify and terrorize poor people downtown that they want to move along or get them to surrender their rights to be in public spaces. All to protect you and me, of course. So that's coming up. The library board, I believe, meets at the Scotts Valley branch of the library. I'll be hoping to give you more information on that. As I said before, on Sunday, I come back with a morning show on Sunday from 9:30 to 1 o'clock. And I'll be talking about that. In the meantime, if you want more information, you can contact the library board. There are a number of them. There's Dick English, Lee Pottinger, Nancy Gert, David Tarasis, who's a council member of the city of Santa Cruz, Jim Reed, who's a council member in Scotts Valley, Catherine Byers, who's a council member in Santa Cruz. You know, I think I may just give her a call and ask her about this situation. Her number is actually, her office phone is mentioned, but I sometimes feel it's appropriate to call council members at home to ask them about these issues for the community. And I think I'm going to probably do that and see if I can get through to her on the phone. I'm giving her a call. We're trying to reach Councilmember Catherine Byers is outgoing, but she's also she's a long-term councilmember, has been mayor twice. We'll see if we can reach her or at least leave her a message on this
issue.
Catherine?
Yeah.
Hi, Catherine. This is Robert Norris calling in. Sorry to bother you.
Hey, Robert.
A full warning, I'm calling you from Free Radio, and this is being broadcast because I'm looking for information about the library board that apparently is meeting in a week, and you're on that board?
We're meeting this coming Monday night in Scotts Valley. I think the meeting starts at 6:30.
And I understand from the Sentinel story that, you know, the issues concern a change in the suspension policy, the service animal policy, the sleeping policy, the unattended property policy. Am I correct in that assessment?
I believe that's on the agenda. I just got the agenda and haven't opened it. Mm-hmm. But I know we continued some items from a month ago, and those items that you mentioned were continued.
How can people get access to that agenda? Is it posted online?
Yeah, it is posted online, definitely. Oh. Yeah, under the probably Santa Cruz Library Authority. Yeah, somehow the library board website, but I know it's posted.
Do you have any thoughts about these issues? Have you, because you were at the last meeting, was there much, I know the discussion was ultimately postponed, but
yeah,
I think
we didn't even get to it.
I see.
We just started talking about the service animals, and then we didn't have enough information, and we needed some legal advice on it.
So, and is that,
everything just got continued.
Is that legal advice part of the agenda packet for people to look at, or is that going to be mentioned at the meeting?
I know John Barrisone is going to be at our meeting.
Okay. And this is up in Scotts Valley at the library there in the
shop. Brand new library in Scotts Valley.
And is that in the shopping center, or is that a
it's across from the transit. You know where the transit district has a building? It's right across the street.
Is that near the post office up there? There's a
I think it's next door to the post office.
Okay. And that's going to be at 6:30 on Monday.
Correct.
I also asked you a question regarding, you know, these Imagine change meters.
I have not gotten any information for you.
Uh-huh. Are you likely to before you leave office?
Well, I'm going to try to, definitely. I just haven't gotten.
Because I know you were on the council when this passed, and it was my impression at the time, I heard some of the debate, that you didn't think these were sculptures or artwork, that they were not really in the same category.
I remember talking about that, and you know, I've never followed up, and I'll try and do that.
Because it does make a much.
One time we did get a report from the downtown, I guess, association, how much money they had collected, and it wasn't a lot, but they were spending it on bus tickets for people. But they were following the same guidelines, I believe, that the homeless service center does. You know, they don't just willy-nilly give someone a bus ticket and get them out of town, but they have to have somebody at the end of the bus, family or a job, in order to.
You know how much on the average is made every year from these red meters?
No, I have no idea.
And for those who don't know, we're talking about the meters that they're called Imagine Real Change.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know.
Right. No, I know you know what I mean. I was just suggesting anybody listening.
Oh,
would know
I see.
These are the meters downtown, and we're talking with Catherine Byers, who's a city council person for many years, but chose not to run again. Why didn't you run again, Catherine? Are you just tired of this whole business? Or?
No, I'm not tired of it all. I just was missed. You know, I've got 10 grandkids, and last May I missed 3 high school graduations, 2 grandkids, and 2 grandkids. I thought, wait a minute. I mean, I've missed them. I can't make it up to them. But I just want to spend more time.
One of your big issues has been homelessness at different times in your political career. Are you planning to come to this Cabrillo College Smart Solutions Homelessness Summit?
I may. I'm hoping to. I plan on running a marathon on Sunday in Sacramento, but I'm listening to the weather report.
Yeah, running in the rain.
I may not do it, so therefore I'll be in town, and I'll definitely be attending the
But you've run in the rain before, right?
Yeah, but if this storming with high winds, I'm not.
I got you. Anything coming up that people should be aware of that you want to alert people to?
Well, no. No, I don't think so. I think that day at Cabrillo will be significant. I hope a lot of people come, and we do. I appreciate one thing you said. I think in your letter you wrote to Don Miller, you know, it's going to take all of us to work on some solutions on this issue, homeless issue, and drugs and trash. So,
yeah, there's a lot of, you recall, there's a strong crowd reaction at the last meeting. I guess this is kind of your sayonara. You got one more meeting and then you're out of the council, right?
I'm out, yep.
Free at last, I guess.
Well, I had 8 years off and that was good, yeah. Then I came back and...
Well, we'll probably be seeing you in court. We can talk then at some point.
Oh, yeah. You gave me a heads up on that. I may be subpoenaed in.
You were honest enough and candid enough to do what Don Miller did not do, which is acknowledge that at one point you were inside the building at the 75 River Street along with hundreds of other people, including Sentinel reporters and other reporters, and that for some reason they never charged you with a felony. Are you some special pull with the DA, Catherine?
I doubt that very much.
Hey, I appreciate your taking the call late at night.
Okay, good night, Robert. Somebody's at my door. Okay,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Catherine Byers. She's a councilwoman, has been a mayor. I am unstinting in my general attacks on council members if they vote to continue the criminalization of homeless people. And Byers, after initially in her career opposing criminalization, took a turn when she actually got into power in 1998, when she got a majority on the city council, became mayor. She then sort of changed coats, or turned coat, if you will. And essentially, when she could have ended the sleeping ban, she took another road. And since then, she has voted along with Don Lane for the anti-homeless measures that have come up in the last 4 years, with a couple of minor exceptions. So I hope you'll forgive me for being nice to Catherine Byers on the air. It's my middle-class upbringing. What can I say? You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, and if you want to catch us on the stream, go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. Look for the name of my show, which is the, some find it a tongue twister, Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, Bathrobe plus Robes Pier, and then look for the online website address, which begins with the words tune in, and you can find the way to get to this show, and so that I don't have to try to describe for you all the numbers and symbols and so forth that go into that address. HuffSantaCruz.org is simpler, so go there, HuffSantaCruz.org. So, call in if you'd like. There is a call-in number here, 427-3772, I'm going to put on a little music, and then I'm going to play some material from the city council meeting on Tuesday, which was a pretty, I don't want to say it was grueling, but it was certainly high intensity. And that was at the usually banal and irrelevant oral communications period, which Mayor Don Lane has set at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, a strategic point at which most everybody is gone. 2 weeks ago, there were like two of us speaking at oral communications, and I don't know, four people in the audience or something. This time, the place was, if not packed, it certainly was full, and there were a lot of folks there. But let's take a musical break, and I'll be back.
Talk your way, this one, I want to hear you try. Tell me all the excuses you can find. I want to see you scramble, watch you squirm. To explain what you've done, look me in the eye. I wonder if you'll dare tell me that you're sorry and try to sound like you care. See you sweat your skin crawling while you try to explain what you've done. The stain on your conscience won't ever come clean. You wear it on your sleeve for the world to see.
And that was What You've Done, Sarah Marlowe. So again, call in number is 427-3772. Catherine Byers mentioned she liked the piece I'd written for Don Miller, or to Don Miller. Don Miller is the editor of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and he recently wrote an editorial about this whole the controversy that essentially began when YouTube videos videos got posted on YouTube about hypodermic needles and trash being found in abundance on Cowles Beach by private folks who were enraged and upset, and I think properly so, that the city had not gone about disposing of this stuff and providing for facilities to dispose this stuff, not to mention facilities for people to take a dump. And I guess there wasn't really a big cry for facilities for people to sleep, since one of the places where I diverge from this group, and I don't diverge in the supporting their attempt to eliminate trash and needles for sure, and holding city officials accountable, but to deny homeless people the right to sleep and have their gear and to be able to use public spaces to do what they need to do in terms to survive, I simply don't agree if people feel that, that they have the prerogative to drive people out of town by smearing them all with the brush of being drug abusers. And I don't think that's necessarily what all these folks wanted to do, and there were quite a number of them who began a march, or I should say a cleanup expedition on the tracks up at Swift Street and where it crosses the railroad tracks, which I tried to join, but I was, first of all, I was too early, and then When I came back 5 or 10 minutes later, they'd left. The quickest arrival and departure I'd ever heard of. But I did run into them at City Council, and you can hear some of the speeches that they made. And we'll do that now. If you have thoughts on this, please do call in. I've invited them to call in. If you want to read more about this, you can go to the Don Miller's blog on the Santa Cruz Sentinel website. He wrote a piece which I responded to, and that apparently is going to be printed in the Sunday Sentinel. I didn't intend that, but he offered it, and I said, great, that's fine, you know, no problem. And I'll be reading his piece and my piece too, although it doesn't really contain a lot that's new, but maybe it's worth repeating. Who knows? Anyway, here's what some folks said. I'm going to be giving you my commentary after each of the speakers, which is, I guess, the prerogative of the guy who has the radio show.
Foundation of making clean water. Before you even think about that, I think you need to keep the water we already have clean. And I think we have a public safety issue. I walked down with a large group of people tonight. We found about, 50 hypodermic needles on our walk down here. And maybe, I don't know how many tons of garbage. So while you guys are building big, giant stadiums, building a Monterey Bay sanctuary that's supposed to protect our sanctuary, within 100 feet of that sanctuary, I'm finding tons of garbage. All right? Tons. Literally tons. I'm finding biological waste. I'm finding human feces. Finding people living. Finding unsafe characters. I'm watching murders happen in front of us, right in front of us. All right? If we're going to be building big, giant things and trying to move forward, we need to reevaluate what we're doing here and think about it for a second. Because if I can walk down here and find 50 hypodermic needles just on my walk to the city council meeting, I don't think you guys should be talking about a desalination plan. I mean, you guys are putting the cart before the horse. I think we need to look at what we have here. We have a serious emergency. There's toxic waste.
And, you know, I'm with him all the way on, you know, babbling about desal and putting up $4.1 million stadiums. I'm with him all the way in refunding Needle Exchange, which was apparently seriously defunded 3 years ago. We've had a couple guests talking about that. The hazard of hypodermic needles being strewn about is real, and Steve Plaich of Needle Exchange may be talking about that later, and he did, in fact, talk about it at the meeting as well, although he didn't indict the city council and the previous council for cutting off the funding for that program, or certainly cutting it back. And not cleaning up tons of garbage, I think that's a great idea to clean up tons of garbage. Biological waste, yeah, that's another concern. Human feces, yeah, although then we start to get into the area that becomes the justification for eliminating human beings as well as their waste. And that's where I begin to diverge from people, some of the opinions expressed by folks in this group. People living unsafe characters. Now that, again, gets me worried. I'm not saying that it isn't necessarily an accurate assessment of some people. I think people living in houses are unsafe characters. I think people on the police force with guns and badges can be unsafe characters. I think the politicians who are screwing us over are definitely unsafe characters. Does that mean they should be denied basic civil rights? No. Does that mean that they should be driven out of town, maybe driven out of office, but not out of town, I don't think. Watching murders happen right in front of us. Well, there have been 2 murders this year, as far as I know. 2. Not saying that either of them were good, either of them were justified. But to say you're watching murders in front of you when 2 people have been killed over a period of a year or 6 months is the kind of inflammatory rhetoric that I think is not, it's not helpful here. And it implies a kind of lack of safety, which, well, you know, I guess you have to add to the murders the fact that there have been assaults. You have to add to that the fact, you know, that, but again, we aren't getting the stats, and it would have been good to get those. Again, it wasn't an agenda item. The city council didn't bother to put it on, say they were going to put it on their agenda, though maybe it will be on the next city council agenda. Probably not. Next city council agenda, there's one more meeting, and that's in December, and then the city council adjourns for Christmas, and the afternoon session will be a business session, so it could be put on the afternoon session, but the evening session is the replacement of council members who are leaving. Four council members are, they're leaving. Actually, three are leaving, and Don Lane was reelected. You're getting Cynthia Matthews, Micah Posner, and Pamela Comstock are replacing Ryan Coonerty. And Catherine Byers and Tony Madrigal, I believe, are the ones who are leaving. So, there will be an opportunity to put those items on the agenda on a week from Tuesday if they want. Instead, the City Council punted on this and said that they would have a meeting of the Public Safety Committee on December 19th or some such date, far into December, which is it's a little committee that. In theory, there is more dialogue. In practice, it really depends on whether the person who chairs that group, I'm not sure who it will be under the new city council, wants that to be the case. And also, I've tried time and time again to get the Public Safety Committee to record its meetings. They don't. They don't televise them. They don't record them. People could bring their own video cameras and audio, and I hope they do. But again, if the issue is driving homeless people out of town and cutting back homeless services to people that this group regards as unsafe characters, I'm not on that side of the scoreboard there. Let's hear some more.
This isn't basketball, all right? These are people dying. These people getting murdered, all right? This is kids finding bags of meth in front of a preschool. This is Santa Cruz. So where we all live, we need to take care of it. Before we start greasing big companies' pockets to build big, giant buildings, we need to take care of our water, don't you think? And basically, I just want to address that we have a public safety issue. Here's a couple of needles I found. Our good friend Jake Vasari brought plenty of bags of other biological waste that was on the way down here. We got a nice video of it. You guys, I'm sure, are aware of this. And I think that before you guys start thinking about all these big projects, you need to think about the people that live here, all the people that live here. You know, even the people that don't have homes and live here. And I guess that's my time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I think Jake did talk to City Council. I don't know that he actually, I didn't see if he had bags of shit to pass on to the council, which might have been actually a very nice gesture because I think, and agree with those other activists who came, members of the community who came outraged at the huge amounts of trash and needles, which I think is quite appropriate to be outraged at. The fact that there are no 24-hour bathrooms in Santa Cruz, with the possible exception of one out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which apparently is open, although, you know, I don't know how accessible it is to most people in the community. And you have to be on fairly good terms with the Homeless Lack of Services Center, I assume, to get in there. You can't use it as a public facility. It's on private property. And then the issue is brought up about environmental degradation, the fact that human waste and feces and such flows into creeks and into the river and into the water. And I think that's a matter of concern. And again, that depends on their folks establishing facilities, I think. Although you're going to hear this kind of nasty tone that it wouldn't matter if their facilities, this isn't said, but people who, it's posed as an issue of a an abusive, criminal, drug-using, fuck-everybody element that has to be driven out of town, is what it sounds like to me. And ironically, I was standing at the side of the chamber with a large sign that said, unsafe to be homeless, because I was going to raise the issues of unsafe to be homeless on Pacific Avenue, unsafe to try to sleep at night in Santa Cruz, not because you're likely to be beaten up by other people or robbed, although those are possibilities. And it would be better if you could sleep in groups of people, but the police don't allow that. The police, in fact, are the main harassers of the homeless, not other people in the community, at least not in terms of these particular ordinances and laws and keeping their property safe. So I didn't bring that up. Instead, I had this sign, which I held up, and I actually got applauded, and I don't want to come in with false advertising for folks. And if people from this group, which I believe was organized, there were several online groups, there were online sites that were involved here. One of them may have been Take Back Santa Cruz. Another was Report Your Local Lurker. And then I think there was one about a community walk. And these folks are different groups of people who kind of coalesce, I think, who have... they share some parts of their agenda or a common agenda. Hey, some part of my agenda is a common agenda with these folks. If Take Back Santa Cruz would only agree to respect the and take care of respecting homeless camps instead of denouncing them and turning them into the police, as I suspect they are doing, and as they made no claim that they're not doing, then we would at least have something in common, and I wouldn't be denouncing them on the air. Let's take a musical break, and I'll be back.
You were the one for me, and I was for you. As the stars in your eyes seemed to melt into mine, we were talking revolution and drinking red wine. Some girls like perfume, and others will melt at the sight of it. Well, they don't mean a thing to me. They never cross my mind. It's talking revolution and drinking red wine. Forget about Hollywood love stories. Well, they don't do a thing for me at all.
Another one by Sarah Marlowe, Red Wine and Revolution. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and on the line with us is the redoubtable Peggy Kennedy of, is it Santa Monica, Venice, or somewhere else, Peggy?
Santa Monica is, hi everybody, Santa Monica is its own city, and Venice is a town, and it's incorporated in the city of Los Angeles.
Well, I know you've been watching police misconduct down there for a long time, involved in some lawsuits against that kind of misconduct, listening into our show, and...
I was listening into those people, and they reminded me of some of the groups in Venice.
And what, do you have a potty problem in Venice as well?
Well, a potty problem. We have a problem of lack of facilities.
Correct. Yep. That's
lack
what I have
of sanitary
too.
Facilities. So
here,
there's probably Venice Beach is, you know, one of the biggest tourist attractions in Southern California. I think it's maybe second to Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
And we have 50 toilets when they all work on the beach.
Well, that's 50 more. Actually, I think we have a few toilets on the beach. In the studio with me is Brent Adams. Brent, you're a man who, have you surveyed the toilet scene on the beaches? Are there actually restrooms open at night on the beaches or not?
No, they are locked at night. Seabright, also out by the lighthouse. And then along the main beach, they all get locked. I think about 7 o'clock. And, of course, all the beach areas are closed at that time.
And what about, what's the story in Santa Monica? Beaches close at night, bathrooms open? What's the story there, or vice versa?
No, nobody wants the bathrooms to open at night. That would mean that homeless people or tourists that are down there at the bars would have access. So, no, they close all the bathrooms at dusk. And in Venice, there's so many people using the restrooms that they break down all the time. So they're... You know, half of them are broken anyway.
Did they have tons of feces and are needles poking out of every playground down there? What's going on?
That needle thing, you know, reminded me of these people that were trying to get permit parking, and they had this, and they were in City Hall at the Transportation Committee, and they had this slideshow where they kept showing, you know, this slideshow of needles and a used rubber to justify permit parking to, you know, get rid of the RV people.
And permit parking we have in Santa Cruz, that's which it says that you can only park for 2 hours unless you have a permit. But more important in Santa Cruz, it says between the hours of 12 and 6, you can't park at all unless you have a permit, which, of course, is ridiculous unless it's designed to get rid of homeless people in their RVs and so forth.
Yeah, that's pretty rotten of them.
Which I find is a bummer also because those are the overlooks that look down over the wharf, the lights of the bay, out to the ocean on a moonlit night. It's illegal to park there. I've been doing it my whole life as since I was a young adult with driving privileges. I'd park there, you know, and just hang out. But you can't do that anymore.
Did they get a coastal permit to do that?
You know, that's a very good question. You raised that question, Peggy, I think about a year and a half ago, because I think that's how you successfully fought it in Venice, right?
Yeah, we fought the overnight permit parking districts in Venice through the Coastal Commission.
I don't think we tried that here. That might be a way to go if we had people who are awake enough and knowledgeable enough to deal with that in that way. Obviously, you've got to come north and educate us, Peggy.
Well, I could come there and hang out for, you know, a vacation.
Definitely.
You can educate me on what's going on up there.
Just bring your colostomy bag and your catheter with you because we don't want no pee-pee or poo-poo, okay?
No. How about my oversized vehicle? Can I bring that?
It is provided, you know, that you park it in a good 50 miles from the city center. Actually, you can park it, you know... I don't know what to tell you about the oversight. I guess, you know, Brent, you've had vehicles that are... What's the problem with parking in Santa Cruz? What's the situation if you want to park in a vehicle that you're living in? Is that... it's illegal.
I definitely have done it from time to time, and people do it. I don't know what's happening now. Definitely it's illegal to sleep outside of a building. That's the sleeping ban we talk about, including inside of your vehicle. And then the neighborhood will call the police to activate them to tell them that somebody's in a car or sleeping in a van.
The International Snitch Network.
Sure.
Yeah.
While I think it, a person who owns a vehicle and it's registered should have privileges to park it and do whatever they want in the vehicle, I totally do understand the neighborhoods who don't want an influx of campers and caca and syringes. That's what they found several years ago out on Natural Bridges area.
And recently in Cowles Beach, apparently.
Right. So what I'm saying
along
the roadway.
Don't you think these people might be exaggerating it a little bit?
They definitely are exaggerating. But if you end up with, imagine 20 vans and cars and buses and RVs all along one street, and there isn't ample garbage or bathroom, then people, from time to time, a person will, walking their dog, will find excrement or something like that. And then they'll use that and blow it up and projected over the entire population of people sleeping in their vehicles.
You know, Brent, you were one of the several people who were joined this march, or I should say this walk, to clean up the tracks. It started at 3:30 on Tuesday and ended up at City Council at 5 o'clock, and we're listening to the 5 o'clock oral communications that then happened. I found TJ, the guy who was running the march, seemed very... I liked him as a person. He seemed very passionate, very concerned about the issues. But you were telling me you think he may have exaggerated somewhat in his description of the 50 hypodermic needles that he said he found on this march.
Sure. And while I said that, I don't really want to highlight that. And it wasn't really a cleanup. Some people did have garbage bags. It was mainly a tour, so an awareness walk, so that people could look, see what was there. People had video cameras and still cameras, and mainly the neighborhood. They invited the neighborhood out to take a walk and see what was there, and then end
focus
up...
Focus on the poo-poo or the pee-pee and the illegal campers,
well,
or needles?
Well,
or?
Focus on whatever was there. I mean, you can't, generate something that's not actually
there. Did they find anything positive to comment on this?
Yeah, I have a friend who was out there who found, he thought it was funny that people were focusing on the syringes and the trash, but what he found in the trash were love poems and some artwork, and he actually saved that stuff and read one of the love poems aloud to say, hey, this girl actually has quite a deep look into love.
Yeah.
And he learned a little bit and read it aloud.
But not your typical walker.
So when you highlight the fact that I was saying something about this person's assertion about a certain number of syringes, I videotaped everything that I could, and I kept my camera running continuously, but I wasn't able to shoot every single syringe,
mm-hmm.
but I counted in my estimation between 8 and 12 syringes, and several of those were wrapped. But, of course, there were many others that were not collected, and there were piles of trash up in the bushes. And because there are people who are living without homes and have a hard time making their way, they may be drug addicted, maybe alcoholic, maybe have mental problems, may have none of those problems and just have a hard time getting housed.
There may be lazy bums and slobs,
sure.
Who just mess up the
and,
area.
And the lowest most easy place for them to do it. They're not going to do it in people's yards or backyards or in front of storefronts. They're going to do it where people aren't hanging out, and that's mainly along the train tracks or down under bridges in the river levee or up in the deep woods where most people do some camping. The people I know of are usually taking care of their trash, not leaving human excrement on the surface and not leaving syringes around. That's the most people. We know that there are well over 1,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz, but we're highlighting the behavior of maybe roughly 50 of them. And that's for me, that's why I'm and I wanted to join this walk. I heard about the website on Facebook called Local Lurker, Report Your Local Lurker, and I saw some photographs of one homeless person on a bicycle and running conversations about various people, and people had reported break-ins of their vehicles, car burglaries, syringes, and so I wanted to see for myself. Also, I've my approach to activism is I'm hoping to integrate communities and not
polarize.
Not polarize. I'm not isolate myself. I may not agree with everyone, and people definitely aren't expected to agree with me, but the question is, what can we achieve together in our community?
Mm-hmm.
And definitely it's...
Yeah, but that exaggerating the negativity, it's like spreading fear and hate, It's like it's a form of hate-mongering, I found.
Yeah.
In Venice, those people, they're going, oh, they're rapists, they're murderers, they're drug addicts.
Then I believe our role would be to exaggerate the positive. If that's not our general mode to look at things and go, oh, that's disgusting. Instead, what I do is look at humanity and go, wow, that's really hopeful and beautiful. The more I interact with people on the street and homeless people, I get an understanding that, wow, these are people too. They're actually, there's a lot of heart there, and they're having a hard time of it. And so I would like to, so that's why I'm involved in homeless activism, is because I actually really respect and love the people I've met. And they don't disgust me, and I would like the greater community to see the positive aspects, too. Definitely I can say, oh, these people are really negative, and they're terrible, and they suck, and I, but...
That's simply not true. People aren't just negative.
Or what I'm saying, so some of the neighborhood groups, they're... trying to protect the status quo. There's this thing that we keep hearing, I want it for my kids the way it was when I was a kid here. And, of course, we hear that, that's always the story. I'm sorry
it's
to say,
probably a little more affordable.
It's not going
housing,
to be like
then.
It was when we were kids. Things have changed. Times have changed, and they're going to change into something else. But we can focus on safety and cleanliness, and we can have a homeless population and focus on safety and cleanliness. But people who own property and are invested in the community have more of an investment and more of a stake, and they have more to lose. If jalopy is camping at their curb, they're going to be more likely to call than a renter would be.
Particularly if their house is underwater and they're already pissed that they're about to lose their house. Peggy, what one of the things Brent has been working on here, and others have as well, may come up at this homelessness summit this weekend, is the issue of a safe camping area, a secure camping area. How successful have you been, or how interested have you been in this down in Santa Monica and Venice?
Yeah. Well, every time there's an area where we're organized and people are cleaning up, if they seem to be able to trash it and arrest people and criminalize them and drive them out. So, I mean, we're in such a police state that, and then the people, the negative community groups that are spreading fear and the fear-monger groups, they're so feral, you know, they have access to so much press. And it's hard to really describe, but it's quite fascistic.
Well,
so,
go ahead.
It goes up and down is what happens. So they just keep coming and making it worse and worse for people, and then you know they'll back off a little while. And
the obvious the obvious solution, at least in the short run, for people who need a place to sleep is, you know, it happens when there's an earthquake, it happens when there's a disaster like you know, Sandy, or, you know, camps, large tents, protective clothing, all you know, trash pickups, sanitary facilities. Homelessness has been an emergency in Santa Cruz for decades, and none of these things have been implemented. But
they lied and said they were going to. We had this a pretend progressive city council person, Bill Rosendahl, who came in, you know, one of the first things he did was make some anti-homeless laws. But, you know, he was always saying how he cared about the homeless and everything like that. But before he came in with this huge crazy task force to go after all the people living in vehicles a couple of years ago, he kept pretending like he kept saying it on the news, he was going to find a place for the people to sleep, and he never ever found one spot for one person living in a vehicle to sleep legally.
That sounds like Don Lane, our mayor. Yeah,
but
right,
it's really difficult. It's like we expect Obama to solve all the nation's problems, and I'm not necessarily an Obama supporter, but I remember when he first got into office, when he was running, his first campaign was "Yes, we can," and he was trying to say, we need to do this together, and I don't expect the mayor or any city council to do this for us. We as a community have to do it, and it'll take some creative approaches for you down there in L.A. It's easy to focus on fear and yuckiness, but the challenge for you is how can you be creative and engage your community?
You know, I know in Los Angeles they've had tent cities back in the 80s, and there was Isla Vista that had a tent city at the, I guess it was in the early years of the 2000s, and Ontario, California had its own tent city a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was amazingly progressive for a while.
So there have been tent cities. And there have been claims here. We've had tent cities here. We've had Occupy Santa Cruz had a tent city for 2 months that ran. It had its problems, you know, but it ran. Certainly better. It provided more shelter and more services than the Homeless Lack of Services Center did, that's for sure.
Yeah, I heard about it. It's great. That was great.
And similar, we had Camp Paradise around 2000. We've had, you know, other encampments at different times. And these encampments are usually, as you say, they're attacked by what I call fear mongers. And there are also legitimate criticisms that come up. what's happened down in Santa Monica? What have people in the last decade organized efforts to start campgrounds? Brent here is a man who believes in trying to get as broad a consensus in the community as possible for a campground and draw in as many resources as possible, get as much general agreement as possible. I'm much more skeptical of that and believe it really has to be done through a sort of an action by a series of militants who essentially establish a fait accompli and then force this kind of through. What's been the situation?
Can you speak English, please? What was that term?
Fait accompli is a something that you got it done, and because it's done, there it is. There's nothing that can be done. An accomplished
right.
fact. Fait
no,
accompli.
Well, we've done just out
that
of
is
necessity.
English, by the way. I'm sorry.
Just
go ahead,
out of necessity, we've done things. Okay, so a lot of people have slept on the beach over the years. I mean, in fact, they made it legal for a while during the when the Olympics was in L.A. You know, but those were tourists. So, but a lot of people have slept on the beach just because it's a place. And so what they did, what the city did, is they got together and decided that they, you know, passed this law and they closed the beach without a coastal development permit. And then they moved the beach when Jones was into effect. There's a road that's sort of a non-driving road.
By Jones, you mean the decision that said they can't arrest people for sleeping, sitting, or lying in Los Angeles?
Correct.
Right.
So people started to sleep on oceanfront walk instead of the beach, and because it was legal. But then all of a sudden, the city arbitrarily decided, oh, no, that's the beach, too. And they started going after people on oceanfront walk. So then a lot of people moved up to the one little industrial, semi-industrial street, which is 3rd Avenue. And it sort of organically was created. An encampment was created there. And it was pretty good. We got Carol Sobel involved, and they did some pretty horrific sweeps during the day.
Carol Sobel is an attorney with the National Lawyers Guild who was responsible in large part for creating the Jones precedent that threw out the sleeping ban in Los Angeles, right?
Correct. And so, I mean, it was pretty good. After that first sweep, which was pretty nasty, the trash trucks came in and they just took everybody's stuff during the day. You know, it was sneaky. So when they knew everybody, they'd been obviously watching it. But then, you know, the next day, they actually agreed to say when they were going to come in after that. And, I mean, this went on for a while. It was pretty organic, and it was working, sort of. But that last one, you know, it seemed like there were some crazy things that you just couldn't believe were real, like maybe they were undercover. Some, you know, guy assaulted a cop, but, you know, all these police are there, and somehow he's Superman, and he broke away from all these cops who had him, who tased him twice, he got away.
Let me ask you, so you're talking about problems, internal problems inside the encampment?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that
bizarre things started happening that seemed like they were.
Was there a Santa Monica? This was last year or
Venice? This was in Venice. March.
March of this year.
March of this year.
Because I know that, I mean, there have been problems inside our encampments we've had here, and they've worked out, although they've alarmed some people. Catherine Byers was scandalized. I talked to her earlier. She's a council member. I remember talking to her.
Yeah, I heard you being nice to her. I was like kind of throwing up.
A little too nice to Catherine Byers, yeah.
When you say she was scandalized, what does that mean?
Oh, it was a horrible situation, she said, as she walked through Occupy Santa Cruz's San Lorenzo campground.
Yeah.
That was in my interview with her in February.
Well, I think there was an expectation of people to see townsfolk, activists, and really doing the work. Like, I think Occupy Wall Street had given people an expectation of what the camp should look like. All these really articulate people working around the clock and really high vibe, and people sending them pizzas, and we're, you know, really juicy energy. And then you can hit some of these local camps like Occupy Santa Cruz. We have a pre-existing homeless population that immediately came under our wing because it was a safe place to be finally.
Right.
They didn't have to run around and hide from cops and hide from each other. They could be there. And it's just not going to look pretty at times.
Right. Oh,
what,
sure.
do you, what do we expect sure. somebody who's been living on the street to look like when they join one of these camps? For me, I believe in something called the sanctuary camp movement, and where the Occupy movement had brought people sleeping right on the city commons, right in front of everyone, and it did highlight that people do have this need. A lot of those people had been in the shadows, and now all across the country we see that there is this need, and growing because the economy is getting worse. And so what are we going to do with these people? And in Santa Cruz, definitely there's a lot of energy about it, around homelessness, let's say on both sides of the fence. Myself, I want to see a compassionate approach. I would love to see the sleeping ban end tomorrow, but I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow. Other people we're talking about, people within Take Back Santa Cruz, or TJ, I can't remember his last name. He's been getting a lot of press and doing a lot of activism locally. He's really positively rallying the community behind him because of some of the negative things that they've been focusing on. But that's energy nonetheless to do something. Some people want to see people just driven out of town, but for me, I'm a little more compassionate. I know, Robert, you focus on the basic human rights of people, the rights of homeless people, and want to make sure that they're protected. But the question I have
talk
is,
about it.
How can we just, like, if we're not going to change the law, and we're not going to build a giant building for everybody to
the stadium. Let's take the stadium.
Well, what can we do in the meantime? We could at least have and I'm not talking about where to have this at this point, but we can start having conversations about a safe place where people can camp. It doesn't have to be right in front of everybody, but it doesn't have to be like hidden out in, you know, the back 40, you know, down in Watsonville either. Just a place where people can feel safe. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of a fence. There's some rules that are agreed on by the community. The police can give it a green light. The city council, all the homeless activist groups, all the neighborhood groups, the churches really want to be involved in this.
And there is an association of faith communities that is probably doing far more than this homelessness summit is going to be doing on Saturday.
Aww.
And that's coming up. Well, that's my
Well, they're actually doing
estimate.
Something, but this is the homeless summit is just going to be, again, another one of these conversations.
A chat-a-thon.
But it's got has way more. It's not just 13 churches getting together and
it's a bunch
right
of politicians.
You have 13 posturing. Churches that'll help homeless
But no,
people.
No, what we have is, well, we have 13 churches, I believe, that help share the burden of feeding. A lot of them don't. There are two different camps. There's the kind of a more, I don't know what how to call them, the Baptists, who only want to help people with their salvation. And then there's another camp in religion here that really wants to just help people. And so they offer food and they offer.
Well, this is a reconstitution of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, as well as some meals, which, you know, was a program that allowed people to sleep on the floors of churches. At its height, I think in 2007 or 8, they were serving 40 to 80 people. But again, drop in the bucket.
Now they're serving about 20 people.
Now they're serving about 20 people.
And four different churches in three nights of the week. They don't have a place to go.
You know, I'm not going to attack churches for doing this, but the idea that this is some kind of solution
is
ridiculous.
What we've got here
is a solution.
They've invited, again, in church groups. The very churches we're talking about will be participating in this homeless summit, as well as city council members, the mayor, police officers.
Yeah, but participating
homeless
in
service.
What is
wait,
my question?
Hold, again, you know. All the members, all the stakeholders in community, the neighborhood groups who we're talking about, the homeless services center, the city council, police officers who deal with this.
I know. I read that whole thing on the air before you came in.
That's all I'm saying is,
Peggy, let me before you let me interrupt you, Brent, just because we got a, you're saying a lot of important things, and the only trouble is, of course, we're excluding the female voices. How are you doing there, Peggy?
I'm trying to be polite, but I was thinking
about how we used to have a couple of progressive churches in Venice, and the police really worked on that, and the community, those neighborhood groups, really worked on that, and sort of the landscape of our churches, most of them aren't that great. In fact, what the Pacific Division of the LAPD did, and that's the division that's over Venice, is they created a LAPD religious group that goes out, they're chaplains.
Brilliant.
And they're from local churches, and they go out in a van, and they try to, and they give out little toiletry bags, and they try to get people, they say, oh, we'll take you to a shelter tonight that's in South Central, and there's, and it's only open at night, and they make you leave in the morning, and there's no way back to Venice.
That's rough.
Well, so that's our
say,
little
solve the problem.
Pretty scary.
Well, listen, Peggy, I thank you for calling in. I'm going to get back to hear more of our local...
I want to hear them. I'm listening to them.
I don't want to call these people vigilantes and terrorists, but that's what I'm inclined to.
They're alarmists. I notice they're alarmists, and they get other people
afraid. They're also genuine people with genuine concerns about real issues, and they just, I think they're, as Brenda said, they're taking it from a negative perspective that exaggerates certain aspects and ignores certain other fundamental aspects.
I'm just calling them a neighborhoods group.
Fair enough. And Peggy,
thank you for taking my call, and you know, keep up the good work.
Hey, no problem, and you too. Keep me advised.
You know what? We're listening in.
You better be. Thank you.
All right, peace and love.
Bye bye. Call phone lines are open 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. This show will go for another half hour, at which point we will all disperse. But I'll be back at 9:30 in the morning on Sunday, and this is a longer show. We'll be able to see the debris of the Smart Solutions Summit. You know, Brent, what I'm thinking, and again, it's wrong to second guess what can happen. And all kinds of strange things can happen in when people get together. But I have seen, I don't know if you remember, in the summer of 2002, when Emily Riley and Ed Porter threw their stakeholders meetings in order to deal with the issues of police abuse and harassment around street performers. They ended up with a whole series of restrictive laws.
Yeah, they
and
did.
They passed them in short. You probably weren't around at that time. I don't know. But
I've been they've been enforced on me. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hear you. Hi, you're on Free Radio with the two stars of the stage and screen, Robert and Brent.
Yeah, Brent's right. Fait accompli is French.
But it's become a part of the English language as well.
But most people don't know that.
Let's not get grammatical on me, caller.
Okay, well, you know who it is. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man.
Bye.
All right, at least we have a man, an educated person listening.
I think that man is a sociopath.
I think he's got to be stopped. That guy is questionable. So I'm going to get back. Let me play some of this city council, and then you can comment on this, Brent. Unless there's something more you want to say right now.
I always have more I want to say.
I know.
I just want to be careful. I think while these people, they took a tour. What I found when I visited Positive Loitering with Take Back Santa Cruz was I showed up there with a sign and I wanted to try to get some press and make fun of them. But I think what's important for us to do is... show up to wherever these groups are and meet them and talk and find out what the people are really saying. Just because there's somebody who made a statement in the press and they represent the group, it's not a homogeneous group. You've got neighborhood people with kids and they're politically the run
for
the
sure.
gamut.
So for
what
sure.
I found with
yeah.
the people showing up at these positive loitering things were people who really care about their community. They hear stuff in the press and they don't know what to do about it. And the only avenue is show up at this thing where this group is. So they come out and they mill around and they talk with each other and they hear the most negative stories. So all I'm trying to say is, what we have here is a community.
I know.
And it's up to us to find creative things to do also, positive things to do. If we don't like this group, why are we not forming our own group?
Well, I've got my own support group. Your local lurker group that I'm going to be working on. But let's hear some more from the city council. Here we go.
Hello, my name is Ken Collins, third generation in Santa Cruz Local. My children are in the audience, fourth generation in Santa Cruz Local. I'm very concerned about my family's safety. I don't let my daughter ride her bike to school because she has to go across the railroad tracks where we're finding hypodermic needles, bags of methamphetamine. It's really sketchy people hanging out and loitering around at the park down the street from my house. I don't let them play there either because in the sandbox there's probably going to be needles in there too. So I go out of town or up on the hill to go play in the park, not the park one block from my house. I think the city needs to put this on their agenda. I highly recommend Santa Cruz City having a town hall meeting and bringing all the organizations that are involved with this sketchy situation of drug use, drug sales, people robbing the cars and houses on the street, people being murdered. I have a house, I can lock the door, but I don't feel safe. There's people that are homeless that don't have that option, that are getting killed right now. And I think the city of Santa Cruz needs to take that serious before we start doing desalination plants and all these other projects. We have a responsibility to take care of the community, the homeless community, the children, the UCSC students. How about the tourists that come and visit this town? I mean, they can step on a needle, and that's something that's 100 yards away from our new visitor center that's trying to showcase this. And, I'm super stoked that everybody came down here, and I want you guys to make sure that you get this on your agenda.
So that's Ken Collins, who I think I also spoke with after the meeting. He shook hands with me, too. I shook hands with him. I'm glad that activists are trying to do something about issues much better than trying and waiting for the city council, the police, and the staff to do anything. And but, again, the focus here is there are people that are being homeless that are getting killed right now. In a way, yes, that's true, but they're not getting killed by the kind of things he's talking about. They're getting killed by being ground down by a series of laws, by a series of restrictions on them, by a series of indignities and exposures that the city could address. But he isn't suggesting instead that the real danger are these dangerous people and the needles and the drug war and the drug abuse. That kind of image, I feel, is just going in the wrong direction. I'm going to read this editorial that I actually wrote it as a response to Don Miller. It was just actually a direct response to his editorial. He's going to print it in the paper on Sunday, he says, which is impressive. I hadn't thought that would happen, but that's good. Was any reaction to anything you hear here,
totally.
Brent?
First, I want to acknowledge Ken Collins. He's bringing up real, like, people are... My car was burglarized a month and a half ago. I lost a very expensive camera and chainsaw and some clothing that was really important to me. I know that how that feels. If you're a parent and you see syringes or you feel hear sketchy things or a homeless person is killed by other homeless people within walking distance of one's home, there's just a natural response that a parent or anyone is going to have, and it's a knee-jerk response maybe that, oh, this must stop and we have to do something about it. We got to clear these people out. I totally understand it. At the same time, I really like the point that he makes is he's got a home to protect himself in. He doesn't feel safe. What about all the other homeless people who don't feel safe? And it's interesting that he focuses on the most negative aspects and then still has a big enough perception to get that it's just not safe for other people who are homeless. And that's kind of what I want to bring out is like, you know, where is the safety?
I think it's
where is the healing?
Well, it's an opportunistic kind of thing, though. I think you know, I had a big sign over at the side, the only sign in the room, that said,
because these people insisted they weren't a protest. They were,
yes, they did. Yeah. But mine was the only sign in the room, and
right.
So it said unsafe to be homeless, which I think he interpreted as meaning, yeah, get rid of them drug and meth dealers, cut those sketchy people off from the meals, get them out of town.
Well,
I
don't agree with it, but I understand it.
Okay, why don't you agree with it?
I don't agree with it because, like I said, I have a little more of a compassionate sense. Like here's the deal. We see a broad range of people within the homeless community. We know that the people who are homeless are not all using syringes and breaking into people's car. We know that. So why would we look at somebody like Ken Collins or the people in these neighborhood groups and try to boil them down into one type of person also? It's very diverse. We're a community of diversity, and
But I'm asking you, why don't you agree with Ken Collins?
I tend to agree with his points. I mean, I understand them. I just don't agree that that's like this...
What do you disagree with in his estimation? In what you've just heard?
I totally agree with all of the complaints he has about what he sees. But to minimize it and focus it all on one community is just not right. It's not the homeless specifically who are breaking into the cars. As we know, there's lots of rampant drug use in houses.
Okay, I'm going to be Ken Collins here.
I'm going to act like I'm Ken Collins.
I'm going to respond to you. Yeah, you're right. It's not the entire homeless community. In fact, there are good homeless people, and we want to protect them too. And the way we're going to protect them is by cutting off the criminals, by cutting off the drug users, by cutting off the sketchy homeless people, and that'll protect everybody, including people in houses. Do you agree with that?
Well,
that's what he's saying.
I definitely, we have laws for the things he's talking about already. We have law enforcement officers for the things he's talking about already. So if they want to say the city council has to do more things about the homeless population, it's really the police.
But they're not going to do that. You know that. The police are not going to be interested in that kind of stuff.
This is not a homeless issue. This is a crime issue. The homeless is a totally different issue. People, and there are 1,500 of them.
I don't want people camping near my house. I don't want these sketchy people near my daughter who goes to school. There are needles in my area, and I don't want them around. So do you agree with me? You're going to help me go out and get rid of it? We'll call the cops on these guys and get them out of here. They're illegally camping out there.
Instead of shipping them all to a concentration camp or firing up the furnaces and burning them all.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that.
Let's all get together and create a safe space for people to be. Now, some people
a safe space for meth users, a safe space for heroin addicts, a safe space for pedophiles and murderers. What are you talking about? This is the kind of thing I was getting last night at city council.
I take the point. I don't know, but meth users, heroin and crack users, and I've seen hundreds of them in Santa Cruz. Coke users, they're the housed population more than the homeless population. Please, everybody knows. People who are using drugs responsibly and irresponsibly in the house population, why focus on the most vulnerable people in the community who don't have a place to keep?
Because they're messing up our neighborhoods, man. They're messing up our neighborhoods. If they want to go and do it in their own homes, all right, fine. Let them do it in their own homes, but don't do it in front of my daughter.
Let's agree on a nice place out of the reach of your daughter, someplace. I'll bring a few places really quickly. What about in the Poganip? What about the extreme west side large lots owned by Barry Swinson, exactly right next door to the Homeless Garden Project? What about De La Viega Golf? There's actually places up there.
A place where you want these meth users to go?
I'm just pulling things out of the air.
Is this what you want? You want to have special privileges and special places for meth users and heroin addicts and murderers?
Meth addicts, murderers, and heroin addicts will be dealt with by the system.
They obviously aren't being dealt with. It's all over the damn place. So what are you going to do?
What I would do is establish a sanctuary camp and with rules: no meth, no alcoholism. You can't be inebriated. You can't have paraphernalia. You can't take people's stuff. There's a code of behavior, and if you break that, you're unable to be there. And if you're actually exhibiting some of these behaviors, and I'm sorry, this kind of runs against a lot of other beliefs that I have, but if we're going to have an agreed upon camp, we're going to have an agreed upon way to enforce the rules, and at times we might have to bring in the police officers.
And I think TJ would probably agree with you. That's a great idea. In the meantime, we're going to run them out of our neighborhood. We're going
to
make sure we don't want them in our
neighborhood.
Get them out of get them out of town, man. Get them out of town.
At least we have to
take care of Santa Cruz. We have to look after our own local folks.
It's a societal problem. It's not a Santa Cruz.
Well, that
problem
may be, but we can't take care of everybody. We have to take care of the people that are here, not the people that are in Chicago, not the people that are in Alaska, not the people that are in Scotts Valley.
We're talking about TJ again. I'm sorry, TJ. I don't remember your last name. I'm not really good at
names. It's online, but I apologize, TJ. I don't know it either.
I'm not trying to align us with TJ. He's representing a local neighborhood thing, and he's been doing a good job at it. He's been taking some heat, actually, by trying to work across the table with some other people. So we'll limit that and just say, we support what TJ has been doing and the neighborhoods group has been doing. But what I would like to say is, what was I? Oh, Jesus, I could lose track of...
You've lost track, let's go on to the next city council. You'll pick up on it.
Hi. I am a 7-year resident of Santa Cruz, a former UCSC student. I have chosen to stay in Santa Cruz since graduating because it's such an amazing place to be. Unfortunately, in the past 2 years, I've seen a significant and very visible change in I think the police policies regarding people that are known drug users and transients, and I feel like it's had a significant impact in the community that I live on the west side of Santa Cruz. I live several feet, literally, from the tracks that go through that area on Lenox Street. I've had people case my house in broad daylight. I have friends who have had friends pistol-whipped and robbed on the tracks. I have found dozens of needles, empty bags of meth. I have had, just before Thanksgiving, my bike was stripped while parked under two security cameras at the Safeway parking lot. I've had my house broke into. I've had computers stolen. This is a significant issue. Now that the tracks are being revitalized and reused, I think that the city council and the citizens of Santa Cruz have a mutual obligation to one another to change how this blight in our community is affecting our community. I no longer feel safe. I used to play rugby. I'm physically fit. I no longer feel safe walking down the tracks at night because I've seen so many people living in the bushes on the sides of the tracks. And these are people that I don't think any one person in this room would be comfortable having a conversation with in broad daylight, let alone confronting at night in an unlit area. Now, to conclude, I feel like there's a lot of anger about this issue, so I'm going to finish by making a suggestion. The tracks have the potential to link the downtown of Santa Cruz to the Wilder bike path. I feel if that was taken seriously, we have the opportunity to create a lit bike path that would solve many of these issues.
And I'm just going to comment very briefly on this. You know, here's a man talking about his own experiences, apparently. I mean, I don't know how accurate he is and whether how much he's exaggerating. He's talking about some secondhand accounts of he has friends who've had friends who've been pistol whipped and on the tracks. He has his own bike was stripped. His house was broken into, computer stolen.
No. He said his house has been cased. That's somebody looking at his house. It's hard to quantify
cased.
Whether your house is being cased or not. That's somebody looking at your house with the intention of stealing things later. So,
well, he said his house was cased, but he also said it house broken into and computers stolen. He used those words as well. So, you know, he's talking about a number of things that impact people, not just because their property is stolen, but because their sanctity is violated. You know, somebody broke into your van and took your camera, a very important part of your whole work.
Yeah.
But more important, the space you live in, the space that is the center
It was a Honda that I own.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I don't know if you live in the Honda, but I guess for more people in their homes, it's more of a matter that you expect privacy in your home.
I'm not outing myself as a van camper on this.
I would hope not, particularly since you're known as a felonious Santa Cruz 11 defendant, which we won't go into at this time. You are tuned, by the way, to Free Radio Santa Cruz. We've got about 17 minutes left in the show. You want to call in and talk to two accused felons, Robert and Brent, you can. 831-427-3772 is the phone number. A couple of things he says, you know, visible change in police policies toward known drug users and transients. It's not known drug users. I think it is... homeless people who are using drugs, although I guess there are probably some people on parole and probation the police are going after who are using drugs. But also, he's seen so many people living in bushes that no one would be comfortable having a conversation with them in broad daylight, much less at night.
I challenge anyone
I'm
to
uncomfortable
walk.
With that statement.
All I have to say is, I don't necessarily think that's completely true. Again, there is no privacy for a homeless person unless you can find some shelter under a bush. And when you encounter a person living in a bush, it's a creepy experience. I'm not trying to, destroy your privacy. At the same time, I'm challenged here. I'm just trying to walk along the railroad tracks, and now I'm seeing somebody habitating. I don't know what to do. You know, like it's a weird dissonance for both parties.
Plus,
and I
if
get
you
it.
Found a needle 3 days before, or you heard an account in the newspaper about somebody getting beaten up, All these factors add up to a fear factor that will condition how you view the situation and also how they view you, you know.
And somebody's working hard, they're paying rent or a mortgage on their house very nearby, and here's somebody assumably taking caca, shitting.
Living for free outside the life of Riley on the beach.
Now, this is the railroad. It's you know, owned by not the city. It's not really the commons. Although it is, like, right up against... We saw some really bizarre stuff during that walk. I challenge anybody to take a walk during the daylight up and down between downtown and the California Street. You will see some residue of former camps. You might see a current camp. I don't actually think it's unsafe.
Did they actually talk to any homeless people on this walk to City Council?
Well, we talked to people. There were people there.
In a camp?
Well, in an area where there was debris, where people were hanging out. Camping is, you don't know who's homeless, who's not.
Right.
People recognized somebody, they did interact with him, and they later said he was an addict and he has lots of problems. He grew up in Santa Cruz, they know him since school days, but this is somebody who has gone afoul and is now
You know, I noticed that both TJ and Ken seem to be, they talked either about their own homeless past or people that they knew who were homeless in a sympathetic way.
Yes.
You know, and so I think that's an important thing, but that does not alter, I think, the dangerous trend, again. What I want to do, I'm going to pause here briefly to read what something about what Don Miller wrote, and then something about what I responded to, which again is sort of a preview of what you're going to hear or read on Sunday in the Sentinel, if you're silly enough to get the Sentinel or look at it online.
We all read it for free online, right?
You can read it for free online, generally. His editorial was called "Keep the Pressure on the Santa Cruz Drug Trade," and my response was called "Keep the pressure on politicians, publicists, and police." But what he writes is
publicist.
Newspaper editorialists, publicists, like Don Miller.
Like himself.
Yeah. Why are people continuing to complain about feeling unsafe and about homeless camps and trash along beaches and in wooded areas? It's not as if these complaints are anything new, although the circumstances, locations, and even the faces of protesters change. This is what Don Miller is writing. Take Back Santa Cruz joined up with some of the local men who had posted a video about their efforts to clean up local surfing beaches. Was this a Take Back Santa Cruz thing as well?
No, it was a... It stemmed from the videos that a guy named... what's the brother's name? Dylan Grainer.
Okay.
He runs a surf school down by Cowles, and he has for many years. He's a well-respected person in the community. He's awesome, I find. Able to parse homelessness and drug use separately. What the fuck am I answering?
You're answering whether Take Back Santa Cruz was involved.
Yeah,
were they?
So,
did you?
I think there had been a dialogue on Take Back Santa Cruz's website or Facebook page, and so Don Miller, or whoever wrote the article for the Sentinel, didn't actually attend the walk and wasn't even at the city council. He'd just seen the thing on the.
So he falsely assumed.
What he did was he remotely reported on what was happening. It was
so
not
he was.
Take Back
but my question was: were Annalisa Cube and Dexter walking along on the march?
Nope.
Was Pamela Comstock there?
Nope.
Okay.
No,
so
people who had been interacting on the Report Your Local Lurker Facebook page and friends of people from the west side.
That was my question.
Yeah.
Good
and,
enough.
And I saw a few people I knew.
Fair enough.
Definitely somebody I know from
you answered my
Save
question.
Our Shores or something like that. He was there.
Let me continue with reading this, though. They took their complaints along with accumulated garbage and drug paraphernalia to the Santa Cruz City Council Tuesday. Oh, and by the way, do we mention that the latest outcries again center on the real subculture that infects Santa Cruz drug abusers and dealers? Because if you look back at other high-profile public safety protests, Poganip and homeless encampments, the common denominator is almost always drugs. Look at the daily crime report posted online and in print by the Sentinel, and you'll easily make the connections to most of the crimes and criminal elements in our country, county. If it's not drugs such as meth and heroin, then it's the other popular drug abuse of choice, alcohol, day after day, month after month, year after year. Burglaries and violence in the community usually connected to drug abuse. Many homeless in our community aren't using drugs or alcohol, but many are. But it's not just transients and scruffy young men with furtive looks and small plastic bags and backpacks selling and using drugs and leaving behind needles and garbage. Santa Cruz, with its nationally recognized tolerance for lifestyles outside the mainstream and its healthy network of services, excuse me while I chortle, to help people in need is often blamed for attracting the drug trade and turning a blind eye toward the mess abusers and dealers leave behind. I do. But let's not argue it now. Some people may think, there are all kinds of things people think, but, you know. The truth, however, is the city has changed its stance significantly in recent years. Recent city councils have worked to make the city safer. Why? By eliminating lifestyles outside the mainstream. That's going to make the city safer. And less of a magnet to the dispossessed and the dysfunctional. Again, assuming it is a magnet. He's not just saying it's perception. This is bullshit. Homeless camps have been raided and taken down. And there he is now talking about the destruction of people's survival gear and their survival places and the violation of their privacy and the treating them as less than human beings. You wouldn't do this to people in houses. Take Back Santa Cruz has played a powerful role in changing attitudes and policies, will probably continue to exert an influence in how social and criminal behaviors are dealt with. Take Back co-founder Pamela Comstock was elected to the Santa Cruz City Council earlier this month and will join a majority that understands the importance of cleaning up the city. Again, these code phrases that Miller is using. I'm going to skip the rest of it because I want to read what my response was.
Joining a majority, and I take issue with that, too. Michael Posner is also joining a majority of people who are going to work compassionately in the community.
We'll see. I wrote, Don, and this wasn't intended as an editorial, but apparently it's going to be printed as one. The folks who came to City Council last night have lots of legitimate concerns about City Council's continuous failures. Some of these failures include A, not directing police resources to real crime rather than visible poverty downtown and elsewhere. B, lack of trash pickups and disposal services for those outside. C, the absurd defunding of needle exchange and other services dealing with harm reduction around needle use. D, the ridiculous priorities of the City Council in terms of multi-million dollar giveaways or lendaways for sports stadiums, desal projects, etc., and E, the medieval lack of public 24-hour bathrooms in Santa Cruz, and of course, the usual siphoning off of public outrage into do-nothing subcommittees that disperse the activism and attempt to damp down the concerns without really addressing them. There are a few things missing from your analysis and that of most of the folks doing the cleanup and the heads up at City Council. First, drug prohibition makes drug sales immensely profitable. Recall alcohol prohibition. Bust one drug dealer and another will take her place. It's a way for poor people to survive in a wretched economy. So it always is with black market stuff. Legalize, regulate, and medicalize the situation as is being tried in Vancouver and Europe. Second, homelessness encourages some folks to self-medicate, given the grim conditions that obtain. Sleeping bans, sitting bans, NIMBY hostility, bureaucratic indifference, and the utterly inadequate social services. Just a fact. Third, lack of alternatives for those who want to break drug addictions makes the attacks on drug users and abusers simply punitive rather than rehabilitative, not to mention futile. Fourth, lack of campgrounds and sleeping facilities for homeless folks. There is shelter for less than 5% of the homeless. Combined with laws that make all sleeping and camping illegal, encourage a general disrespect for the law, a lack of solidarity in fighting real crime, assaults, thefts, etc. I would encourage folks to struggle to protect themselves against theft and not rely on the police. That doesn't mean assuming that every homeless person you see in the bushes is a threat, or raising a hue and cry to starve out or drive out every, quote, sketchy person. Increasing police and vigilante harassment and violence against the homeless community is the wrong way to go. A lot of this serves to distract us from those who are engaging in theft on a much grander scale, such as the banks that foreclose on homes, those that strategically relocate jobs overseas for cheaper wages, and both political parties who play deaf, dumb, and blind as foreign wars devour tax dollars. Not to mention inaccessible local officials ignoring the community's needs, both of the poor and the working people, to decent services and real health and safety. I would say this to those indoors who are ready and willing to address problems that city council members and city staff are not. Meet with homeless people and talk with them. Invite them to community meetings to learn their needs and experiences. Work with them to address real crime and to end the criminalization of the innocent. Homeless people are four times as vulnerable as you are to violence and stamped with the label of criminal to begin with every time they sit down near a building, sleep under a bridge, or ask for a dime after dark. That's what I've written. And TJ responded to that online. He said, "Thank you, Robert Norris. As the organizer of the Put Unity Back in Community Walk, I would like to express that we protested nothing, we carried no signs, and we are not fighting for anything. We are raising community awareness of the issues that you have pointed out, and we are working, not fighting for change. I find it very unprofessional of the media not to talk to the organizer of the walk."
He was like, "Hey, I had an issue with Don Miller, who didn't interact with him." He didn't interact with him because he wasn't present. Don Miller never showed.
Well, he could have called him up. He could have reached him out.
It was Don Miller who wrote the article. It was somebody else who wrote the Miller. Brown?
Well, but I think he's. This is all in response to Miller's editorial.
Okay. So while I totally agree with most of the points you make, point number one is how are we going to solve homeless issues, decriminalize drugs? Again, these are things that aren't going to happen tomorrow or any time this year. We can't even get a marijuana initiative on the ballot.
Times are changing.
We didn't have a pot initiative on the ballot in California this year because we couldn't get enough signatures.
No, but in fact, the fact that it has been decriminalized in two states means it may be decriminalized by legislative action this year.
All I'm saying is there are other ways to understand how we can help homelessness other than,
I'm not talking about
Build them a giant facility for them to live in, or just simply create a safe space for them.
I'm not saying that's the way to help homelessness. This is an editorial co-mingling drug abuse and homelessness, and that's what this movement is doing too. And I'm pointing out that you don't end drug abuse by driving people into the bushes. I mean, I suppose...
I'm saying. Homelessness and drug abuse are always hand in hand. They definitely are not.
No, but they're talking... But that's what they're talking about, and therefore I'm responding to that. If you really want to talk about drug abuse, you got to talk about real solutions, not about driving people away, whether they're homeless or housed. You know, I mean, that's... At least that's been my... Maybe it's just an ideology. Maybe I should learn more. But I haven't heard any good arguments against that position.
In my activism, I'm not talking about drug abuse at all. It's not my function. I just want to make sure that people who need a safe place to sleep at night have a safe place to sleep at night. It doesn't need to be any one of these over-designed, over-engineered, overbuilt buildings that we have that cost so much to live in. Just a simple tent that is in a safe place is ample for a person to get a place to sleep. That's the low end.
We've only got about 3 minutes left in the show, and I got to point out that Linda LeMaster will be having a benefit this weekend on Sunday. That's the day after this Homelessness Smart Solutions Community Summit, and it's going to be at India Joe's, and I believe it's at 3 or 3:30. Do we know what the... I think it's at...
LeMaster has been convicted for the 647E sleeping ban when she was supporting an anti-sleeping ordinance protest called Peace Camp 2010. She was trying to stay up all night to protect somebody who was sick, and she had dozed off and was cited. She is a hero in the community. She's been an activist around these issues for a very long time.
3:30 on Sunday is the...
Yeah. So I encourage people to come out and support Linda.
And there's going to be a couple of attorneys there. Her attorney will be there, Jonathan Gettleman, the attorneys for... Santa Cruz 11 activist Robert Norris will be there, David Beauvais, and I believe there's going to be Kate Wells will also be there. She's an attorney who's a longtime civil rights attorney in Santa Cruz. That's at India Joe's Restaurant, and that is at, where is the address?
418 Front Street.
Thank you.
And food will be served.
And
they
are asking for a donation, and that's, if you could kick down money, this is a benefit, but it is also an attempt to spread awareness. And there's a phone call. Who could that be? Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Brent.
Well, we cannot hear your guest at all and have not been able to for the last 10 minutes.
Wow. Hello, can you hear me now? Hello?
How about now?
Can you hear me now?
Huh. He doesn't apparently want to hear you. He probably heard you in the distance, but it looks like you can be heard. But
I see the light blinking a little bit when I speak. All right, thanks.
But we are at 8 o'clock, so it may be time to move on to another arena, perhaps.
I feel like I haven't been heard.
We'll see if you've been heard or not. I think I maybe it's just me that our caller has a weak radio.
We're gonna do a redo.
But Brent, you make you're well invited to come back on Sunday if you wish to continue your, you know, your work on trying to establish a safe sleeping place for folks, a secure sleeping ground.
That's Sunday morning. Okay. Also, I want to plug myself. I'm a local documentary filmmaker. My name is Brent Adams. I have a film called "What Are You Doing Here." Inside Occupy Santa Cruz. You can find my film easy access at a website called subcommandante.com. That's subcommandante, DANTE.com. Subcommandante, and that'll take you right to 9 segments of the movie that I've made. I'm creating another one currently. I just want to make sure everyone looks at it. You'll enjoy it.
I actually mentioned it earlier in the show. Food Not Bombs will be serving food the same day as Linda's benefit. So if you can't make it, actually, I'm sorry, it'll be first serving on Saturday, the day before. Once you've gone to the Homeless Summit at Cabrillo College and come back, if you're into that, you get 4 o'clock at Loudon Nelson Park. There's going to be a feeding. And if you want to actually do some cooking, you can do that too. Get in touch with Roxanne at 421-2843. Can you open the door? There we go.
Hello?
And I hear a knocking at the door. That could be the FCC, but it's not. It's some burly old guy who's got some booze with him. We don't allow drinking in the studio, sir. I'm sorry. There's no intoxicating beverages.
After 10 p.m.
And sleeping is ill-advised after 10 p.m.
Not encouraged.
Not encouraged. Good point. All right, that's it for this edition of Bathurst Spears Broadside.
Thank goodness.
And as you can hear, you're going to be treated to some more activity
just
from
shut up and go home.
Uncle Dennis, who is one of our more outspoken activists. My apologies. Steve Schnarr was going to be on the air, but I didn't reach him. Steve, we're going to try to catch you on Sunday. Steve is covering the whole situation of the Santa Cruz Police Department's failure to continue to provide bikes that it is discarded to the bike church and instead.
Doesn't have to do that.
At the apparently instigation of city council members of a more conservative bent.
Is turning
them over to the bike dojo, or was. I'm not sure if they're still doing that.
Yeah.
According to Brent, they still are, but who trusts Brent? I certainly would never.
I saw them unloading bikes yesterday.
A witness, my God, this is interesting. There's also, I guess, protest helped save some of the services in Watsonville recently. I was going to talk about that, but there ain't no time. And I will be back on Sunday with...
Unfortunately.
I'll actually be... boy, it's going to be a long day for me. I'm going to be doing it here in the studio. Then we're going to be going off to Linda's benefit. And then we're having a recording of a TV show, which is also going to be concerning Attorney in the Santa Cruz 11 and Linda LeMaster and all these important issues around civil rights violations against either homeless people or those who would support real changes in the situation. Brent, thank you for being with me on Free Radio.
Thank you.
And Dennis, thank you for your very exciting technical call-in to let us know that Brent wasn't being heard. Part
I
of my
called earlier, but he was driving.
I see. Well, you know, his mic was up, so I'm not sure what the story was.
Test.
Well, not anymore.
Boy. Well, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again. 423-4833 is the number to call me if you want to catch me off air.
And a little bit of Joe Satriani to get us started tonight. I'm Uncle Dennis. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 on your FM dial. We also can be found on the Wide Word Web if you'd like to figure out how to get your streamer tied to us. There's a number of ways to do that. One is to go to www.cruzio.com and scroll down the left-hand side of the screen until you find streaming media, and there you will find FRSC, and you can tune into our stream that way. All right, this is a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. We're here every Thursday evening from 8 to 11, playing rock and roll from the 60s and 70s and beyond. And we certainly do hope you'll stay tuned for more music. Of course, at 9 o'clock, we have the Earth First Update. Before that, we'll definitely reveal the brew of the week. And, of course, at 10 o'clock, we will play some new vinyl on the Ultimate Vinyl Hour. So stay tuned to Free Radio. Donate if you can. And here's another little bit of Joe Satriani for you.